For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Hello and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Colombo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL. Well, this is an interesting picture. Right now, live in Fort Myers Beach, Florida, the president is speaking alongside Governor DeSantis.
Wild.
Here's two gentlemen
mm-hmm.
that you don't usually see standing next to each other and
it's
working together. It is about time. Let's pop in. This president is speaking live. Let's pop in here for a second and dip in and see what they are discussing.
Opening this part of the state by tomorrow and with more to come. And the state is co-locating insurance villages at the same center. So you're not sure what your insurance circumstance is. You're not sure what you're going to get. You can show up and determine in one place, meet with your insurance company and also apply for federal assistance at the same time. From FEMA to Small Business Administration to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, there are many ways we can help, and we've already started. Already, 200,000 Floridians, 200,000 families, I should say, have registered for urgent assistance, like buying food, getting their prescriptions, clothing, basics. And how many of you lost your businesses? Well, insurance may not cover everything, may not cover the full cost. So we're in a position, some of the folks are going to have lost their homes as well. And the question is, you have insurance and we'll cover the cost. Well, I directed the Small Business Administration to speed up the processing of low-interest disaster loans that can provide up to $2 million for small businesses and nonprofits and additional money for lost income. And 200,000 for homeowners to close the gap between what insurance won't cover and what their needs are. And that's in around 1.5% interest rate. And folks, look, yesterday the state asked me, and we immediately agreed to activate our hotel program. So individuals who need hotel rooms won't have to pay for anything. I know there's not many around here, but they can go to the nearest hotel and not have to worry about paying anything and just have the coverage. If you don't have insurance, or if you're underinsured, and you found a place to rent, or your car has been destroyed, you're entitled up to $37,900 in federal funds. If you need to make repairs to your home, you may be eligible for another $37,900. So you possibly can be able to get close to $80,000 for your needs. It's available. And folks, look, the most important thing you can do is register so we can help figure out who is eligible for these things. Hundreds of FEMA personnel are going door-to-door, and to help with that, well, you call 800-621-3362, and I'm told you're waiting for hours and hours to get through, and you're not getting anybody answering the phone.
Okay.
We've talked about that.
We'll continue to keep an eye on this, but that is Joe Biden talking live in Fort Myers Beach, Florida, standing right next to Governor Ron DeSantis,
mm-hmm.
who, as I was looking through the news of the day earlier, I saw that the two men were meeting and discussing and, you know, working hopefully towards benefiting all those people down in Florida that have been affected by the hurricane. Ron DeSantis has a face, right? Right now, am I making that up?
I think that he has a face. I think that he has trouble with Biden taking the microphone and trying to explain what needs to happen for Floridians. I think he is very much like, dude, just give me the mic. Tell me what you want to say and give me the mic and I'll do it.
He looks like a dad that is like staring at his son going, if you say anything wrong,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to step in.
I mean, he and his wife both are. Oh, there it goes.
Apparently, just lost the feed.
Martha wasn't ready.
How could you be?
I think he and his wife both were very much like, you're right. Don't say anything don't say anything political. Say what you need to say and bounce out of here, President.
Yeah.
It feels like. Oh, okay. There. It feels like maybe this should have been happening though, like 2 days ago. It kind of seems a little late.
Look at the stark difference just in the way that they stand,
mm-hmm.
just in the way that they
Oh, there he goes having struggle bus.
They present
the jacket on.
Like, yeah. Like, Ron DeSantis looks like he's in command of himself and what he's doing. And Joe just doesn't look that way at all.
And
I'm
so
sorry,
does his wife, and so does Jill. All three of them look like they were in control of themselves.
Jill always looks terrified.
What happens
like,
next?
Like, yeah, like, what's he gonna do?
Where are we
going? So, anyway, if any more interesting, or we get any more details out of that situation in Florida, we will, of course, let you know. Got a great show for you today. We yesterday, we were supposed to talk to Christian Daytalk, White House correspondent, speaking of President Biden. And he was unable to join us yesterday due to some scheduling issues there in the nation's capital, but he is able to join us today. So in just a few moments, we will talk to Christian Daytalk from the Washington Examiner. And also, since it is Wednesday, Wednesday means one thing and one thing only, and that is the great Mark Close from KC95. We'll open up Close's cabinet and see what is inside in a little less than an hour from now, about 3:05. So make sure you are here for that. Speaking of the president, Joe Biden, President Biden announced earlier today that he is going to release 10 million more barrels of oil from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve in November in a move to counter rising gas prices again. His decision was announced just hours after the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, said it would cut oil production by 2 million barrels a day. The cuts will restore the oil market for top producers like Saudi Arabia and Russia, but are also expected to drive up costs at the pump globally. So that's cool. Biden's attempt to circumvent the spike in gas prices expected to hit the market in time for the midterm elections, because that's what it's all about. But it may not prove all that effective. In March, Biden said he would release 1 million barrels of oil a day to counter record high gas prices, but prices still soared. The president will continue to direct SPR releases as appropriate to protect American consumers and promote energy security, the White House stated. And the White House statement went on to say, quote, he is directing the Secretary of Energy to explore any additional responsible actions to continue increasing domestic production in the immediate midterm, including once again calling on energy companies to lower prices and just make less money, just lower their profits to cover up for his mistakes.
Absolutely. That is the game.
Because that's what companies do. Look, I'm never going to be a defender of big oil.
No.
But to go to any business, any company, that's what businesses are in business to do, to make money.
Right.
And, of course, we shouldn't allow that to be unethical. We should make sure that they're not gouging people. They're not unethically making money. But to just go to businesses and say, look, we kind of screwed things up because you just make less money.
I mean, and that's
that's not the way to fix it. Just like telling Americans, hey, instead of putting the air conditioner at 70, why don't you put it at about 75?
Mm-hmm. Help us all out.
Yeah. No.
Do your part. But this is essentially what the administration is saying and feeding to its voters, is that these oil companies, these gas stations are using price gouging and using this crisis to up the ante on what we're paying right now at the pump. And that's not what's happening. What's happening, and we all know this, is that the price for oil is going to be astronomical. The price for gas is going to be astronomical. It's going to keep climbing because we're not making – they're stopping the pipelines. They're wanting to get that oil. They're wanting to get these resources, these natural resources, from outside of our country. And so this crisis, it's really beholden to the Biden administration. But again, they're passing the buck, even though Biden says he never wants to do that, passing the buck off to these companies saying, American people, see what they're doing to you. Look at what they're doing at the pump for you. And I mean, I think it's terrible. We know the resolution that they can come up with, and that's to open up the pipelines here and help us out in a time of crisis.
I'm sorry, I can't stop looking at these pictures. Joe Biden and Jill Biden standing next to Ron DeSantis and his wife, thinking that the wrong two are president and first lady.
Oh, yeah. DeSantis is like, how'd this happen?
The country's got to be like, how did this happen?
How'd this
happen? Why'd Jill come running in here like, oh, God, what's he saying?
Well, he has his jacket half on. This is where someone comes to help him with his jacket because it's half on, half off.
Yeah, he can't. He can't get it. He just can't get it. Oh, Joe.
Here we go. There we go.
Where's the arm go, Joe? Ay.
DeSantis, what a good guy, Ron DeSantis. No,
but you're exactly right about sorry for jumping around. You're exactly right about the gas prices and the oil reserves and president. The only reason that announcement was made today is because it takes effect on November 1st, and the election is on November 8th. That's the only reason that announcement was made today.
But we have to believe now that there Americans aren't thinking that the only problem happening at the gas pump is because these companies are saying, let's take advantage of this crisis and gouge. Like, let's make sure, let's go ahead and charge whatever we'd like to charge because we know people need gas at the end of the day. Like, we've got to believe that voters don't think that that is the only thing that's happening right now.
Again, I'm not going to defend oil companies ever, but you're exactly right. That is not the only reason, and it's not even the prime. I mean, we have the ability to get this under control to a certain extent.
Yes.
By relying on American oil reserves.
Mm-hmm.
By doing it ourselves and not being beholden to Russia and Saudi Arabia. But that's the game the president decides to play backwards. And then wants to blame it on Americans and gas.
And push green energy. And in the same time, push green energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we will get green energy. There will be a day where we're all driving electric cars, but it's not going to be because of federal policies and mandates. It's going to be because of capitalism, and somebody's going to create a way, probably Elon Musk, create a way to have electric cars and make them be better and cheaper and more efficient than gas cars. They're not there yet, but one day they will be because of innovation, not because of because AOC wrote it down in a bill somewhere. But until then, we could help ourselves out tremendously by taking control of this problem. But we won't do it. We won't do it. Local headline here. The man convicted in David Dorn's death has been sentenced to life in prison. The man convicted of killing retired St. Louis police captain David Dorn has been sentenced to life. In July, Stephen Cannon was convicted on 6 counts, including first-degree murder of David Dorn. Prosecutors said Cannon shot and killed Dorn in 2020 at Lee's Pawn Shop during the unrest in the wake of the George Floyd protests. After the sentence was announced, Cannon told the court that he was sorry for the family's loss, but this was not justice, pointing to a witness in the case, Mark Jackson, saying that witness who pointed the finger at Stephen Cannon as being guilty for this. He says that Mark Jackson knows who did this and it wasn't him.
Oh, wow.
But according to the jury and the eyes of the law, Stephen Cannon is guilty and is now serving life in prison. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, great victory.
It is a great victory. It's a great victory for law and order. It's a great victory to know that we can still convict criminals of doing terrible things in the city of St. Louis. And certainly somebody needed to be held accountable for the murder of Captain David Dorn. And of course, the murderer.
I'm so happy for his wife.
Needed to be held accountable.
I mean, there's nothing that can take away. There's nothing that can be done because she lost her husband. But my God, is there some justice in this world and justice for the people that were left without him?
Yes.
Specifically his wife. I'm so happy for Anne.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Amen. The Supreme Court will not hear a case opposing a Trump-era bump stock ban. We talked earlier this week about the Supreme Court, the new Supreme Court, with Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson on board, is underway. And this week, the Supreme Court declined to hear a case in which Second Amendment activists sought to invalidate the Trump-era ban on bump stocks. The Supreme Court declined to hear a case in which Second Amendment activists sought to invalidate the Trump-era ban on bump stocks, the latest in multiple such cases the justices have refused to take up. The lawsuit, Gun Owners of America versus Garland, initially targeted former acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker while former President Donald Trump was in office. More recently, Attorney General Merrick Garland, appointed by President Biden, was the top named defendant after taking over the lead Justice Department post. The case challenged a 2018 decision by the Justice Department under Trump to ban bump stocks. That move followed the 2017 mass shooting at a concert in Vegas. Everybody remembers the Vegas shooting, which, by the way, that's one of those cases that I don't ever, I feel like we never got all the answers.
Yeah, closure on what happened.
Yeah, mm-hmm. How it happened, why it happened. The only thing that came out of that case was the ban on bump stocks.
Yep.
And listen, I'm a big Second Amendment supporter. I don't care about bump stocks. I don't care that they're illegal. Maybe there's some 2A people out there that
do
will tell me that I'm so wrong for thinking that. But bump stocks wasn't a popular piece of equipment. It wasn't something like this. Isn't something that I'll go along with the slippery slope argument. I'll go along with you there. Like, oh, if they're gonna ban bump stocks, then it just makes it easier to ban. I'll give you that. I'll give you that argument, and I'll say that we need to stay very vigilant that doesn't happen. It's just hard for me to get worked up about bump stocks.
Yeah, it's crazy to hear about that Las Vegas shooting, that mass shooting that happened, because there I don't remember what the resolution was. I don't remember if we even got anything logical about how he made it up there with all of that ammunition and all of those guns.
Right.
There's a lot of mystery still surrounding that, and that was a long time ago.
Yeah, and there was some weird audio of, like, gunshots before the gunshots, and, like...
Was it a one-man or two-man job? Yeah. I think that was part of it also.
There was a lot of very strange reports from the witnesses that were there, and some of the audio that was recorded by various people and law enforcement, that I just feel like we never got all the answers.
I agree.
It just kind of...
Came and went.
Went away.
Yeah.
And we.
Banned, I am going to actually look into that on the break.
Bump stocks. Please do. All right. We are going to go to the nation's capital and talk to Christian Datok, White House correspondent with the Washington Examiner, get his thoughts on what is happening as far as the president, the White House's announcement today to release 10 million more barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Starting in November, just right before the November elections. Also, what the White House is saying about this meeting that is happening right now between Joe Biden and Governor Ron DeSantis in the state of Florida. We'll get the latest from the White House in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
'Cause I hit a plug in the road, lost my way home, cut off on the mainline, like a disconnected modem.
Welcome back to Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL. I am Tony Columbo. My partner is Katie Fitzpatrick, and joining us on the phone once again from our nation's capital is White House correspondent with the Washington Examiner, Christian Datok. Christian, how are you, my friend?
I'm great, Tony. Thanks for having me back again this week.
You bet. Always great to talk with you, and certainly never any shortage of things to talk about. Let's start with what is happening in Florida right now. The president is there. Very interesting pictures. We actually took a little piece of the press conference live here in our last segment. A bit stark when you follow politics as closely, you know, as we do here and you do there, of course, and knowing how dramatic politics are these days, to see Joe Biden and Ron DeSantis standing next to each other and speaking to the press together You know, it'll definitely make you do a double take. Can you tell us from at least the White House's perspective, what is the president doing in Florida? What is the goal of these meetings with Governor DeSantis?
Well, the president is down there primarily to, you know, show hearts and minds, and he's done this with a lot of disaster areas across the country and trying to show the people in those communities that, you know, the U.S. has your back, not only from a fiscal standpoint, but, you know, in a personal moment. The president spoke about how he and the first lady have been praying for the people of Southwest Florida for, you know, over the weekend and in the days leading up to the storm. And on top of that, I think there were some attempts to sort of put to rest the scuttlebutt from people on Twitter or other avenues of social media that, you know, President Biden was specifically not doing everything he could to help Floridians because of his ongoing spat with Governor DeSantis. And, you know, I don't think either the president or the governor were overtly warm. Obviously, this is a tragedy that they're dealing with right now. But they both acknowledged, you know, the state and the federal government have been working hand in glove over these past few days to put politics aside to make sure that people get the help they need in really desperate times.
Putting politics aside is certainly something that almost never happens anymore. We saw, you know, politicians trying to take advantage and score political points off of this hurricane before it even made landfall. So that's awesome, very refreshing to see these two leaders working together and trying to at least temporarily keep the political spectacle off to the side. Do we know, as far as the information that we have, has everything that Ron DeSantis requested from the federal government or been offered by the federal government, has there been any issues between the two, or is Ron DeSantis getting everything that he's asking for, and the president is, you know, addressing the needs of Floridians as much as state officials are asking?
I think Governor DeSantis is getting what he's asking for. He noted that President Biden immediately approved the 60-day disaster request. Normally, the federal government only grants a 30-day request, but because of the strength of the storm and because we knew how deadly it was going to be, they went ahead and doubled that. Now, that's not to say the federal government will cut off aid after 60 days. That's just sort of a preliminary measure. So as it stands right now, you know, Florida sort of has a blank check in terms of search and rescue operations, wreckage removal, everything that needs to be done in the immediate aftermath to begin, you know, getting the power back on and to begin serving fresh water to people again. So I do think, and, you know, Governor DeSantis noted that in his speech, I do think the needs of Floridians are being met right now, but we don't know just how much aid the federal government will eventually end up giving because we don't know the full scale of the devastation yet.
And speaking of the hurricane, last week, Karine Jean-Pierre there at the White House I would like to say that statements made by me are my opinions and not the opinion of my guest, who is a White House correspondent. last week, Karine Jean-Pierre lying to the press briefing, the press pool, saying that Joe Biden was not confused and didn't think that Congresswoman Jackie Orlowski was in the room, even though he said, "Where's Jackie? I thought Jackie was going to be here." How you can then look in an adult's face and say, no, he knew she wasn't there. He knew she was gone. It is maddening and frustrating and insulting and a lot of other things. This week, has she had a chance yet to address the president saying that he was raised by Puerto Ricans?
That has not come up in the White House press briefing, believe it or not, Tony. I think, you know, we would get a similar sort of outright spin from Karine if that was asked. Again, this is just sort of a history of pattern a pattern of behavior from President Biden where if he's not outright falsifying something, he's stretching the truth. And, you know, I'm sure he knew Puerto Rican people, you know, there were Puerto Rican people in his community growing up. But again, this does sort of seem like where he's trying to give sort of an affectionate characterization of himself as an everyman, and it comes out just false. I want to give the press a little bit of a pass. We've been mostly drilling down on the hurricane fallout and what the federal government has been doing. But I think once things sort of cool down and everyone can take a breath for a second, those questions will come right back up again.
Yeah, Christian, those are both good questions by Tony, because I can't imagine being Jean-Pierre up on the podium having to explain to the press. And as you just said, Christian, the hurricane just happened. We're worried about how we can get Florida back from ruin right now, gas prices. There are important things for you guys to be asking about. But holy cow, when those two things happened back to back, basically in 2 weeks or a week, that was, I would say, one of the most shocking moments I have seen from this president. And I know that you can't say anything about that, Christian, but holy cow, from a listener's perspective, I was like, whoa.
Raised by Puerto Ricans.
Yeah, very bizarre. I wanted to circle back, if I could, about these gas prices. And I know a lot of people have been kind of hammering Jean-Pierre about this at the podium. I know Peter Ducey asked Jean-Pierre about if Biden's taking credit for the gas prices going down, is he also someone that is saying, I'm responsible for the gas prices going up? I didn't get to hear her response to that. And I was wondering if there was, did she have something to say whenever basically Ducey was like, okay, well, you can take credit for this, but are you also going to make sure that you're responsible for the gas prices being astronomical and there's nothing that you guys are doing about it?
There wasn't a real response to that question yesterday, Katie. And, you know, we heard more of the repeated lines about how, the war in Ukraine is responsible for driving these gas prices up. That's true. But then again, we hear today OPEC Plus decides to cut daily production of oil by something like 2 million barrels. That happens after the U.S. has sent all of these overtures to Saudi Arabia and the other countries in OPEC Plus, urging them to ramp up production to ease not only gas prices in the U.S., but across the global community as well. So to anyone, and again, we didn't have a briefing today because the president was traveling, but I'm sure this will come up tomorrow, to anyone following this even moderately closely, there is, you know, a correlation there. The Biden administration was trying to get something done on the world stage. The exact opposite happened. So I'm not sure who specifically was handling those negotiations with the Saudi government, but someone in the administration is going to have to take the blame for this one sooner than later.
Sticking with gas prices, the president, and we read this story in the first segment, the president has announced that he's going to be releasing 10 million more barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. That will go into effect on November 1st. I think that is the day after. I think at the end of this month, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is the initial announcement that we had back in March that he would release a million barrels a day from the reserve to combat prices. That is set to expire at the end of the month. So this new announcement picks up right when that it expires, and another 10 million barrels of oil will be released as he tries to combat these prices that are back on the rise. And certainly that going into effect on November 1st, when the elections are on November 8th, I'm sure has something to do with it as well. Can you let us know what any more of the details that the White House has released about their plan to combat these prices? Is there more to it than releasing these 10 million more barrels of oil and any more details surrounding that issue?
You pretty much hit the nail on the head there, Tony. And I think there's a couple of points that are worth diving in on. The first is that the White House wasn't planning on tapping the Strategic Petroleum Reserves again. They thought that production was going to be ramped up globally, not only from the companies here in the U.S. who have committed and have started ramping up production, but especially given that ongoing mission of negotiations with the OPEC plus countries. We wake up this morning, that's the exact opposite. So this seemed to be like sort of a cobbled together last-minute solution to an extremely bad headline. I mean, if we go back to the late summer, President Biden's, you know, big run of successes really kicked off with gas prices dropping tremendously. Now, they weren't back down to where they were before the outbreak of war in Europe, but they had dropped, you know, something like $1.80 nationally compared to that nadir back in June. So this does seem like it's sort of a, well, we've got to do something type maneuver. That being said, we don't really have any more details. The bidding on those barrels from the SPR is not public, at least until several months down the line. So we're not going to be seeing who's buying up those barrels right now. So again, we don't really know. I do think it's important that, at least from the White House's standpoint and the Democrat Party standpoint, that this kicked in before people headed to the polls in the midterms. But I am curious to see how this last month before people cast ballots, just how high gas prices will go. Because again, it's not rocket science. We all know the election is going to come down to the state of the economy. And this, along with the ongoing CPI increases, the PRE increases that we saw late last week, that's going to be at the front of everyone's mind when they're heading to the ballot box.
How focused, and this might be two separate questions, because there may be a difference between the White House, you know, and the press briefings that Karine Jean-Pierre specifically handles, and the president himself. And if there is, please, please let me know. But how focused is the White House and or the president on these elections on November 8th? When Karine is addressing the press pool, are they talking about the elections? Are they making their point about how important it is to elect Democrats and to hold on to the House and the Senate? Or are they trying to – are they more focused on the issues of the day, and then perhaps the president will go out and campaign on his own, but the campaigning isn't necessarily coming from, you know, the press room at the White House? How much is this election playing a role in press briefings right now?
Well, Karine will often talk about how she can't specifically talk about any politics surrounding elections because of the Hatch Act. But we do know President Biden has been on the road a ton these early few weeks of fall. We know that he was, you know, potentially going to be traveling even more and had to stay sort of close to the East Coast to deal with the fallout of these storms. But I expect, you know, he's going to be traveling two or three times a week between now and Election Day. The official line at the White House would be that they're not consumed by what happens in November. But anyone, again, watching the situation knows that this is an extremely important election for both parties, really. Republicans have an opportunity to carry out all these investigations into the Biden administration and even Hunter Biden, that many have called for. And then on the other hand, President Biden, you know, hopes that Democrats will be able to hold on to at least one chamber if he has any desires of being effective in these next 2 years of his term in office. So the focus is on November. The focus is on the midterms. I would have to imagine, obviously, besides the human element and how deadly these storms were, there's a lot of people in the administration who are sort of looking at Ian and saying, you know what, you ruined a good thing. This couldn't have happened at a worse time. Because, again, we were zeroed in and targeting November 8th. And that's first and foremost at the front of everyone in the White House's minds right now.
Christian, we're almost out of time, but one last point about the president traveling and the president campaigning. You said that you know, he's been on the road recently. We expect him to be traveling in these coming weeks, as what, we're 34 days away from Election Day. Do we know anything about specifically about the president's travel schedule right now? Do we expect him to be in, you know, like the hot, you know, Pennsylvania and Georgia obviously are the two states that come to mind when you're thinking about massive elections that are happening in November? Do we expect to see the president in those two states very much? And other than that, on the road a whole lot here in the next 4 or 5 weeks?
The only trips we officially have on the schedule right now are one to Hagerston, Maryland, which is, you know, about an hour and a half drive from the White House. He's going to be meeting at another manufacturing center that is receiving funds from the bipartisan infrastructure law that was, again, passed late in 2021. But beyond that, we don't know specifically where the president will be traveling. You mentioned Pennsylvania. I think he's made something like 28 trips there as president. It's by far the state he's visited the most. Georgia, again, with everything that's surrounding Herschel Walker that's popped up in the last few days, you would expect him to be sent there and sort of really try and bring it home for Senator Warnock. But again, we just don't have any more information on his travel right now. They usually wait a few days, wait until a few days before the trip to formally announce it, not only for security reasons, but sort of to, you know, give them a little flexibility and send the president where the White House believes he could be the most effective.
Christian, certainly always appreciate the insight and information there from the White House and look forward to talking to you again very soon. Thanks for your time, my friend.
Take care, y'all. Be well.
That is Christian Daytok. He is the White House correspondent with the Washington Examiner. You can follow him at TOC Radio, at Talk Radio on Twitter. You can also read his articles on the Washington Examiner website and our website, newstalkstl.com. All right. Alec Baldwin has settled a wrongful death lawsuit with the family of Helena Hutchins in the terrible tragedy that happened on the Rust set. We will tell you more about that story in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
She's going to the other side.
Are they listening to us? Look at this.
I know. This happens a lot. This happens a lot.
Covering the Rush story on the television right now. I think they're listening to us. They heard me tease it, and they're trying to beat me to the story.
Come on, Fox News. Be original.
No kidding.
Jeez.
Welcome back to Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL. Right there, I mean, we're just proving ourselves to be right on the cutting edge of the news cycle, something that you never want to miss. So you don't need to. You can subscribe to the Columbo and Katie podcast anywhere you get podcasts. We put up every day's show. Shortly after we go off the air as a podcast on Spotify and Apple and Amazon and Google and our website, newstalkstl.com, and just about any other place that you get podcasts. So make sure you are subscribed to the Columbo and Katie show on your favorite podcast platform. Also subscribe to the brand new Columbo and Katie YouTube channel where we live stream the show every day so you can watch us as well as listen to us. You can also watch us on the News Talk STL Facebook page and Rumble page, of course, but the brand new Columbo and Katie YouTube channel also has other videos that we put up, fun videos, serious videos, silly videos. You never know what you're going to get. It's a whole lot of fun, so make sure you are subscribed to that as well. Subscribe to the Columbo and Katie podcast and the Columbo and Katie YouTube channel. Alec Baldwin has settled a wrongful death lawsuit with the family of Helena Hutchins. Alec Baldwin and Rust producers and the family of cinematographer Helena Hutchins, have reached a settlement. Hutchins died when a gun Baldwin was holding fired while practicing his shot for the film Rust on the New Mexico movie set on October 21st, 2021. That is a year ago now.
So wild.
A year ago. It's like 2 weeks from now,
so
it'll
wild.
Be a year. That's incredible. Wow. Quote, we have reached a settlement subject to court approval for our wrongful death case against the producers of Rust, including Alec Baldwin and Rust Movie Productions, LLC. As part of that settlement, our case will be dismissed, said Matthew Hutchins, Helena's husband, in a statement. Additionally, Baldwin released a statement regarding the resolution of the lawsuit on social media saying, quote, we are pleased to announce today the settlement of a civil case filed on behalf of the family of cinematographer Helena Hutchins. Baldwin captioned a screenshot of an article. Throughout this difficult process, as everyone has maintained the specific desire to do what is best for Helena's son, We are grateful to everyone who contributed to the resolution of this tragic and painful situation. Now, important to remember here is that this was the civil suit that was brought by Helena Hutchins' family against Alec Baldwin and Rust Movie Productions LLC, and I think even a few others, like some of like the director and a few other people were specifically named in this civil suit. So that is over with now after this settlement is approved by the court. But that doesn't mean that a criminal suit, a criminal charge could not still be filed. And there's still criminal investigations going on surrounding this death. So in this shooting. So this is not, it may appear at first glance that this is over with, that this has now been settled.
And a victory for the family.
And the family's going to get some money or whatever they're going to get. And it's all in the past. That's not necessarily the case, not by a long shot.
Is the criminal, I'm guessing that then the criminal suit is why he's going, he went on George Stephanopoulos' show and is telling a bunch of reporters, like, I didn't pull the trigger. Because, the, I mean, I'm, wouldn't that be the, like, yeah, or, the main thing of.
Or the court of public, you know.
I mean, I'm sure it had to do a lot with our opinions.
And trying
for sure.
to make sure that he has a career.
But I mean, after legally. This is over with. I guess his case is being made. I didn't actually pull the trigger.
Legally, it's going to come down to the police investigation and the evidence that the detectives find and all of that, that ultimately decides whether or not there's going to be a criminal case. So civil case now settled. The family of Helena Hutchins is getting some type of financial settlement. From Alec Baldwin.
It's still good for her
and
family.
Others. It is good for the family. But it doesn't necessarily mean that all
cluster.
Of this is over.
What a cluster for that family.
What a cluster for the rest of us when we have to talk to Mark Close.
Mm.
And that is in mere moments. Something that you do not want to miss. We are going to open up Close's cabinet and see what's inside as we do every Wednesday just after 3 o'clock. So don't go anywhere. You are listening to Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.